The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for Dungeon Masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond.
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 Yeah, mother... Damn it. All right. Welcome, everybody, to Beyond number 504. I'm Max Scoville. I'm joined by Brian Altano.
Hey, baby cakes.
Jonathan Dornbush.
Charmed, I'm sure.
And Marty Sleva.
Hey, both of those.
Why?
Marty. You can't just be like, I don't like the catchphrases and then not have one of your own. You have to be like problem and solution oriented.
Incredulity is my catchphrase.
Classic what? Melancholic incredul- Marty.
Incredul- right. Incredulability.
So, sometimes this is a PlayStation podcast where we talk about all sorts of cool games for the Sony console of our choosing. You know, they make a bunch of them. Anyway, we've got a lot of stuff coming up.
Make one.
That's not even
Vita.
They made four.
Not now.
Yeah, they make a bunch of them.
Mostly focus on one of them.
A whole bunch. Head on out of the store. You can get all the ones you want. Anyway, it's the middle of the summer. There's not a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about it anyway. A couple games come out. There's Pyre. There's Fortnite. There's Sundered. Somebody bought a thesaurus. And they're named video game developers. Let's get into it. Who played what?
Let's talk about Sundered. So Sundered is a new game that just launched this week. It's a sort of procedurally generated Metroidvania buzzwords.
What does that mean?
So I'll put it this way. So it's kind of a hack and slash 2D game. Mm-hmm. It's got sort of rogue light elements to it in that, like, you sort of head down into this deep kind of weird Turkish cavern and kill what I believe are cyborg bugs and then collect their orbs and then bring them back up to this guy who's got a very thick Tunisian accent.
So what you're telling me is it's a video game.
It definitely is. It certainly is.
Turkish or Tunisian?
I'm making stuff up here. It's not real. This is not real. I'm lying. That's what I'm doing. So no, you go downstairs into the basement of the video game. You kill bad guys and you collect all these orbs and bring them back up and you level up this gigantic skill tree. And that's pretty much the entire focus and the crux of this game.
Okay.
Is getting more powerful.
And right? The thing is, like, each time you die, you restart from the beginning, but with all of the skills and experience and everything. So
it's a little more forgiving
than a Souls game. Like, you don't have to go back down and retrieve your souls for, you know, penalty of possibly not to.
So what I'm realizing as I age into oblivion on planet Earth is that I prefer roguelites over roguelikes because of stuff like that. Mm-hmm. They are forgiving enough to sort of be like, hey, you get to keep some stuff. You don't start from zero at the beginning. You know, it's not like square bottom. That's it. But what I also realized is that I like level designs when it comes to Metroidvanias and 2D platformers, and that procedurally generated stuff just doesn't gel with me. And I was reading reviews on this game to see if like how it's connecting with people. And people really like it, and rightfully so, because it's a really gorgeous game. The combat's really fun, and you're sort of doing this mix between hack and slash and this roll mechanic, which, you know, kind of like a lot of games you play nowadays, leaves you sort of unable to get hurt during that minuscule period. And I like all of that. And I like traversal in this game, mm-hmm. and I like combat in this game, and I like the art in this game. But I don't find myself connecting with video games that are procedurally generated anymore because they're different every time, which is great for people looking for a new game every time, but they're also different every time.
Sure.
Which means that I can't be like, this is my favorite part when this happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? It's also procedurally generated video games in a scenario like this also kind of momentarily and occasionally kick you into environments that just straight up don't work.
Right.
You know? I mean,
that's the thing is with procedural generation is your math needs to be perfect. Mm-hmm. Because if it isn't, then you get tossed in a room and you're like, this isn't fun. This isn't fun either because the design's not great, because the level, the enemy placement isn't good.
So it lends itself so well to roguelikes and roguelite because that's an entire genre about repeating yourself.
Yeah.
And about going back out there and kind of getting caught in that loop. But with Metroidvania, that's a genre that is so dependent on solid level design.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like having a certain level of curation and, you know, intention. And it just, I mean, if you kind of, you toss these two words up in the air and it's like, I love Metroidvanias, but procedural generation, I'm just like, I'm cool. Thank you.
Well, and they seem almost diametrically opposed with each other. Like when I think of Super Metroid or Castlevania Symphony of the Night, like I think of those levels being bespokely designed by, you know, an incredible artist.
Right.
Not only visually, but in terms of every nook and cranny of it feeds into the mechanics that I slowly get throughout the game and the abilities and everything. And so to take that away and have some of it be random seems a bit strange.
There's an intentionality to everything in that world. Whereas even if the combat is super fun, you're enjoying all that, I can see how, for me, it's like I remember Castlevania games because it was, oh, I had to go this way to get to that part of the castle to do that. Or the same with the Metroid game.
Well, like the entire crux of Symphony of the Night is when that cool secret thing happens. Yes. I don't know if we can talk. It's been
we can
so
talk
long.
About the inverted castle at this point.
21 years,
I've only played the first 20 minutes. So I'd prefer if you just.
Well, towards the end of the game, if you're good enough, the castle flips upside down. And I can't imagine that. Yeah, you play the entire
game. I want to do a spit take.
Also, Alucard backwards is Dracula.
Grant the Nasty.
So is race car backwards. It's race car. Same word twice. Crazy shit. So the weird thing is, like, if that game had been procedurally generated, the castle would be upside down, and you'd be like, so?
You really messed that one up.
So I don't really know how that works for, I mean, and I think that, like, a lot of games are leaning into this now because it's like a cool thing to do. And the tech is incredibly impressive to be able to create something that can do that on its own. But I don't think the lasting appeal is going to be there. I think we're enjoying these games right now, and I don't know where they'll be. And I don't mean like every procedurally generated game, because some games work better than others.
Yeah.
But I mean, so like, it's a cool game. Check out some Let's Plays, some YouTube videos. Maybe it'll click with you more than it did with me.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm constantly searching for like the next Metroidvania that it will just like truly grab me, and this one didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so my hunt continues.
Well, with procedurally generated stuff, I think that there are instances where it works really well. Like Spelunky is a good example.
Which just hit its 5-year anniversary.
And then and Rogue Legacy is another one.
Yes.
And then there are ways you see it, like in the guns in Borderlands, where it's just sort of like it's this bottomless pit of like stats and things. And you're always – that always bugged me, because it's a sense of like sort of constant buyer's remorse.
Yeah.
You know, like you can spend all day at the supermarket trying to find the perfect apple. But then if you eat it, then you're like, what's the next best one? There's a limitless amount of like kind of nuance.
Yeah.
There. And it's like, I think that there's a way somewhere between like Spelunky's level design and Borderlands weapon system where it's the procedural element is in there and it does something, but you've got sort of a more structured game crafted around it. I just don't know what that looks like now.
I think, I mean, you look at something like Minecraft, which totally works like this, right? Because all the elements are still there somewhere. I don't know if they've ever screwed up and accidentally rendered a Minecraft world that's all sand. But I don't think so, right? Like, that would have to take – that would be, like, a massive glitch.
Yeah.
So, like, when you play that game, it's sandboxy, and there's stuff
but not everywhere. Too sandboxy.
Not too sandboxy. And there's stuff everywhere, right? And you can – all the elements you need, all the ore and everything is there. And you're not really, like – you're not timed or anything like that. It's a lot slower paced. So I think, obviously, it's a mechanic that can work.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't necessarily think it works for – 2D games of this nature.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I'm in the minority on this because this game's getting great reviews. So, you know, try it out for yourself. Check out some videos. See if you like it. But
So on the subject of Minecraft, a game that also dropped, Fortnite.
Which I think handles procedurally generated stuff really well.
Yeah. So this is a game.
I'm super interested about
that. We have been talking about this game since 2012?
Yeah, when did you guys first preview this game?
I think
1995.
I mean, seriously, 2013?
No, it's been
well
over
a fortnight ago.
Yeah, it was a very long time ago.
This was the first game announced running on Unreal 4. Mm-hmm. That's how old it is.
Wow.
Yeah. This was, I believe, before current gen systems were even out or fully announced yet. This was a thing that Epic was kicking around, and it's sort of procedurally generated crafting survival heavy zombie defense.
Jeez.
Does that sound about right?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
And it's out now. They fit it. They made it. They made the game. It's that's it.
Yeah. You did a stream for Fortnite.
I did, yeah. So we got to play with the devs. We played for about 2 hours. I also did the interview at E3 where they showed off. It's a game that shows off really well. So it's the kind of thing where they just drop you into a level, which is procedurally generated. And the crux of this game is basically building forts, which is like really fun and like charming because the art style is kind of goofy. Yeah. And then these sort of like hordes of cartoon undead, kind of like over the top Left 4 Dead-ish zombies and ghosts and other evil minions of the night.
And just minions.
Actual minions.
Yeah. Children of the night.
So you go around and you break stuff and you collect sort of elements and hash them together and build these kind of giant forts. And you can set down traps. You can set down springboards. There's this very cartoony element to it. There's tons of different guns and there's different classes of characters. So when you play with friends, it's really fun because it's just like all four of us could be playing at once. We all head to different corners of the earth. You have a sniper rifle, so we build you a sniper tower. And you can go up there and just kind of hang out. And then I'm down on the ground with a melee weapon. I'm really much more boots on the ground. I want to smash dudes in the face. Mm-hmm. And then you guys are just running around with like shotguns and machine guns and bombs and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And everyone is trying to tear down your thing. So you have this ramp, like sort of like crazy element of being like, we have to protect our base, but also protect ourselves and protect each other. And the core of the base is this sort of nucleus that can't be destroyed. And I just think it's really fun. And this is the kind of game that like I went from being like passing interest in to doing a stream and being like, this is going to be big.
Yeah.
And the game's already sold over 500,000 copies as of a week ago, probably way more by now.
Yeah. Like crap.
So it's going to reach a lot of people. And it's like it's in a weird open beta thing now that you can pay into to get a bunch of stuff, but it's going free to play next year, I believe. So I think that if you want to wait, by the time you jump in, like there's going to be a billion things to do in this game. Mm-hmm. And it's got this really cool sort of like pinata mini game system where you collect things, and how well you do and how well you play, you collect cards that open up pinatas that you can smash open that drop guns and candy and all this other kind of stuff.
Oh my, I love
which
pinatas.
Is like incredibly satisfying. Yeah. Like you have melee weapons and you bash it against these like really realistic, almost Viva Pinata looking pinatas.
Huh.
And you beat the hell out of them and crap drops on the floor and you pick them up and you get cool stuff.
Yeah. There's an art into the like sort of, the sensation you get from opening up like a random chest or like a loot box or something.
Yeah.
In something like Overwatch or this. And I feel like they're really nailing it with the aesthetic of the pinata.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, this is like, we just talked about how randomized stuff doesn't work so well with some things. And I think for here, it totally does. Like you can sort of, and the cool thing about this is there's a lot of different settings where the world can be randomized. It's not like Minecraft, which is like Minecraft. Mm-hmm. Like there's like suburban areas where you can go into a 3-story house that has the entire front of the building ripped off and go upstairs and just wreck the TV and mine it, and then wreck the bathtub and mine it, and just like loot everything and build something new out of it. Or you can be like in the woods or in a forest or in like a canyon. And depending on the layout, like there's a lot more verticality at play. Like we got really lucky. We were playing this level that just had like a bunch of different sort of tower hills, and we built this vertical platform above them, and the guys were trying to get up there and couldn't. But one of our guys fell off and like fell down in the pit, and we're like, yeah, sorry, dude. It's not worth it. Like, I think there's something really fun about that. Yeah. And I think if you play with the right people, it's really cool. Even if you play yourself with bots, like I said about putting Max in the sniper tower, like you'll have to make those decisions on your own and build the right vessels and areas for people to hide in.
Yeah.
Like a sniper, if you put him in a tower and you wall him off on everything but one side, he's like, I gotta shoot out of this way. So you kind of tunnel enemies his way, which you can do by creating sort of an intricate system of that, and then put all that at use. So I think this works for people.
I'm really excited to see what happens with this, because we're at a point when this game was first announced, there was Minecraft, and there was Left 4 Dead, and I think we were seeing the beginning of like DayZ, maybe. That was so like still very early on, but now we're at this point where these kind of like sort of weird teamwork-based survival-y games, like, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds is like a weird game where people are just kind of dropped on their own, and they're like, what are you going to do? Go for it.
Yeah, it's what the most popular game on Steam right now.
It's the most popular non-Valve game ever.
Yeah, right? And not coming to PlayStation currently, which pisses me off.
Yeah, that's annoying.
Get on the phone.
Yeah.
Shuhei. I love you. I'm trying to threaten you.
I'm excited to see what Fortnite does. I think it's also really cool that it has spent this long in development. I feel like they've been tweaking it and just really play testing it and trying to make something that does work in the wild. And it's hard to do that without just kind of being like, hey, check it out. You know, but we've seen stuff like Ark Survival Evolve, where it spends too long kind of in, you know, early access or like public beta.
Did you see the full version of the game just got delayed again? And it's it's tough, right? It's cool to have,
but it's, I don't know. There's that sweet spot between kind of creating something in a vacuum and creating something for the masses and letting sort of too many cooks into the kitchen.
Yeah, and I saw like some backlash against the pricing model for this thing, and it's justifiable to a degree because this will ultimately be a free-to-play game. But literally everything becomes cheaper if you wait.
Sure.
For the most part, you know, especially video games, like very few of them get more expensive over time unless they're like box sealed NES games.
Especially now in the age of digital games.
Yeah, and digital games especially.
Wait a year, you'll always get the game of the year edition.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, when we spent like $120 on Battlefront and then we talked about it for a year, and you can get that full game for like $15 in certain sales now. And it's like, yeah, just jump in. Like that's how much it costs to get lunch in some places.
Yeah, I mean, CDs used to be $20-$30.
Yeah.
Now they're like, you know, you go to Goodwill.
Like $1. And it's easy, like if I don't know, if you didn't sort of grow up playing games in the 90s and the early aughts, it's easy to sort of disregard Epic as just like, oh, it's that team that's been making this game for years and then all they do is make an engine. But it's like they made Unreal and Unreal Tournament, which were some of the biggest PC games of all time and some of the most influential games, especially multiplayer games.
Yeah, and I think it's great news that the game is selling so well, obviously, because that means the team will support it for a long time. And that honestly could have gone either way, especially like you hate to see anyone work on a game for like 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 10 years and then it just happens and disappears. Like you look at like The Last Guardian, right? I mean, obviously there was no version of that game where there was like DLC and stuff like that, but had it sold maybe 5 million, I mean, there'd be an entirely different conversation around it. Like, would we be getting a sequel to it maybe? Would we be getting, like, I don't know, a VR mission? Like, you never know, right?
Yeah.
But that story...
Ultimate Guardian.
Yeah.
Prequel. Yeah.
Yeah.
That story has been told and it's over now. So, I mean, Fortnite's a different thing. And I think it's going to keep growing and that's really cool to see.
Yeah. I think also Epic has they have the luxury of, like, they do get a ton of money from the Unreal Engine being licensed out. And they're also, I guess they're sort of owned by Tencent, the big Chinese mobile game company. Yeah. So they're like, they're kind of sitting pretty in terms of having some wiggle room to develop stuff internally, I hope.
And it's done some awesome, they did Robo Recall, the VR game, which is one of the coolest VR games that exists right now.
So in other news, Pyre.
Yes.
Marty, you want to talk about this?
Yes.
You playing this?
Did you get a chance to play it?
Oh, yeah. I'm like 2/3 of the way through the story, I think.
Oh,
yeah.
Awesome.
Go easy on spoilers.
Yeah, we're going to go easy on spoilers because there is like a very cool thing that turns the game on its head. We mentioned it briefly.
Does the castle get flipped upside down?
The entire pyre.
Wow.
Yeah, the pyre gets flipped upside down.
Alucard.
Pyre backwards is Irim.
The Darkula.
But the more and more like I play this game, like it is so stupid to describe it this way, but it's like a visual novel mixed with religious basketball.
Yeah. No, it's 100%.
Like, it is like, it's like
you're half, or I don't even know the split exactly. It's probably less than half.
Hold on.
Religious basketball?
Yes. Yeah.
The actual gameplay
is NBA Jam, but it has rights.
Yeah. Don't you have like a figurine of Jesus like dunking a basketball?
Oh, yeah, I do. I have a toy of that. I put Cable in there too. So
think of that.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. With a book.
Yeah.
The book.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's called Nintendo Power.
Yeah. And that's what the reader reads. You don't know that because you haven't played Pyre yet.
Reading is actually a big part of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fundamental.
But the core gameplay is so fun and the strategy gets so deep. And, and if you play Bastion or Transistor, you understand the sort of depth that Supergiant can go for. But the strategy of you choose three different characters to have on your religious basketball team, and you face three different other characters in their religious
Scottie
basketball
Pippen.
Team. Yeah, Scottie Pippen, Dennis Rodman, and Michael Jordan.
Really?
No, they're like various like fantasy characters.
Yeah.
But they're of like different like weights and speeds. So think
you guys are not goofing.
No,
this
no,
is really a religious basketball game.
One of them is named Sir Gilman, and he is a worm from the sea.
Yeah,
and he's a knight.
But all the characters have different forms of movement, different abilities to jump, different speeds, different strengths, different special special attacks, and each one, when you use them in the rights, you choose three to bring in. Those three level up more than the rest of them. And the whole thing is, so there's the basketball and the hoops, and the only time, you know, you can only move one character at a time, and when you get the basketball, you're tossing it back and forth, but when you have the basketball, you're defenseless. You can't use your attacks. And so what you want to do is kill the other team with a character that doesn't have the basketball, and then try to get one of your players to get a basketball. It's a very hard game to explain.
How much of what you're describing is just regular basketball? Because I'm not really a sports guy.
Yeah. I mean, for me, the thing is, it's the main thing about it is that split of the basketball style, like NBA Jam 3-on-3 sort of thing. But then also a heavy part of it is the outside of that, where you are talking and learning about the world and the characters, mm-hmm. and you're mm-hmm. making dialogue decisions.
The world of basketball?
No, the world of these characters.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the rights.
Yeah. The basketball game is called Right.
You're all basically outcasts in this place called the Downside, which is where people who have been kicked out of this nation called the Commonwealth now live, and you basically all are competing in the
It sort of feels like a purgatory, and the way you get out of purgatory is by competing in the rights.
You just have to shut up and jam.
You have to shut up and jam. Yeah.
There's trouble in the Windy City.
There's a lot of talk, but
here's your chance to do your dance at the
Snake gets out of trouble in Escape from L.A.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. But you start to, you grow very attached to certain characters.
Yeah.
And then, you have to make these really tough decisions that, like, not only will influence the story going forward, but also influence the game mechanically and influence the religious basketball going forward.
Please stop saying that.
I don't know. That's just,
religious basketball. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
It sounds so dumb, but it is so good.
I love it.
It is so stupid.
Well, is this from Supergiant?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Why don't they call it Bastion Ball? So what I was going to ask you guys, like, what if I wasn't? Get through it.
Well, I was going to say, like, in terms of Supergiant games, it's probably the least like Transistor and Bastion. Like, those are
much more of a piece than this,
because those you are walking around in a world and exploring it. There are clear, like, gameplay links, and you can see things. Like, I remember distinctly in Bastion, it was like you could turn on specific things to make each level harder for yourself. There are things like that in this game for each of the battles.
Yeah.
But it's very much, this game is a much more, like, we're telling, you're part of this world and we're building out the story and delivering these characters and this idea of this entire crazy world that I love, but you're not really walking around it. Mm-hmm. You're more exploring it via the conversations.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I have a huge issue with Supergiant games. It's just a personal taste thing. Mm-hmm. I've tried so hard to like Bastion and Transistor. Aesthetically, I think they're really cool in the kind of their own separate ways. And then mechanically, I know there's like really deep systems there, but I feel like they're almost kind of disparate. Like the fact that they're like, oh, here's like Bastion, for instance, was that wasn't procedurally generated. That just had the world.
The world was literally being created in front of you.
It felt like that was kind of fitting because it felt like there was no ground there. Mm-hmm. Like they designed the parts of the world that seemed most interesting, and the systems were there to have like a really just a solid gameplay experience. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't know, there was it. It's like a weirdly unsettling feeling for me. Mm-hmm. Like there was the kind of the universe you're in is almost, it's like almost abstract or surreal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, this kind of seems like more of the same because it's religious basketball. But I mean, if it's cool systems, then.
I mean, I feel like there's probably, if the thing there for you with Transistor was that like it felt like the world was kind of on the periphery of it.
Yeah.
This is very much like the world and these characters are in your face a lot more.
Okay. Yeah.
Like Bastion did keep you kind of removed with the case of the narrator. Like mm-hmm. he's narrating that story to you about, and the character is called the Kid.
Yep.
The storytelling in Bastion is very sparse, but here it is a focal point of the game. And for me, it's the thing of like, the bummer thing about it is that I can't walk around this world. Like I was saying to Marty and I think Andrew, like I want to write short stories about some of these characters in this world because I'm like, I want more. Like I want to walk around in that town that they go.
Yeah. I mean, that was kind of my thing is the fact that you are walking around in Bastion and it just didn't feel like there's a narrator going on about it. And it didn't seem like the world was actually there for it to be narrating. But in this case, my imagination's filling in the blank, like maybe that works.
Yeah. For me, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Because there's a ton.
It's interesting. Cause I usually have the opposite effect with game worlds that don't feel fully fleshed out, where I start to see through the seams and it doesn't feel like true escapism to me. There's like a lot of old games where there's just like the background is just the JPEG and you're like, oh, there's not actually like a mountain there. That's not real. There's a lot of video games where like you are told the story or experience the world through cutscenes and through narrative. And without actual exploration, it sort of feels like you're like stuck in an elevator in a building that you can't walk around in.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little, like, don't think of it as open world in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Like Witcher or Dragon Age or anything.
Sure, no.
But everything that is there and the characters and what they all bring to the table and feeding into this main overarching story, while simultaneously the more time you spend with a character, the deeper you get into who they were and why they were cast out of society. So you're sort of given the ability to focus on specific characters in a really interesting way. Like, if you find someone interesting, like, pull them into your party, talk to them more, spend your time leveling them up when you have like a free night,
and you'll be rewarded for learning more about them.
It feels a little bit like Persona 5 in that respect, where you are building up, it's less confidence and more like you're going deeper and deeper into a specific character story when you do have a free moment.
And also just aesthetically, like, the game is gorgeous. Darren Korb, who has been the composer for every Supergiant game, did the soundtrack too, and I love
it. It's so good.
Like, it's very specific too. They have different tracks for each of the characters and sort of the different teams of enemies you fight, and it's all of a piece but can be very different, and it sounds awesome.
And it is weird because there is like a standings, like in the same way there is in the NBA, where you fight the same teams in rights multiple times and see what your win-loss record is. And if you lose a right, the story continues. And I totally recommend, if you lose in this game, to not restart.
Yeah.
Is because you, to deal with your consequences in a really interesting way. Yeah.
Oh, that's really fascinating.
Yeah.
It sounds like a little bit XCOM too.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Where you have to, like, your story is sort of, failure is a part of your story as opposed to, well, it's game over, but I'm just going to restart.
It's obviously built into the dialogue that they've created, but it feels very cool to be like, oh, I messed up. And that character remembers that I messed up.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That rules.
Yeah. Oh. Play Pyre.
He's on Pyre. Boom shakalaka.
NBA Jam.
Anyway, from downtown, Patapon. They remastered Patapon. They're back, those little asterisks or whatever, those little things. Those little marching boys. Do we have anything? Greg Miller doesn't host the show anymore. Hasn't hosted the show for like 2.5 years.
Oh, but he's very excited for Patapon.
So played Patapon because he talked about it so much on this show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got the magic touch.
Yeah, I love Patapon, and I don't know. I think it is cool that this game hasn't had a new game in five years.
Still doesn't have a new one.
Still doesn't have a new one, remastered. But I don't know. To me, this was announced sort of at the same time as like Parappa and Wipeout and everything, and even Crash, where it's like, hey, I feel like a lot of these are proofs of concept of like, let's test the waters. Like, are people still interested in this? And I feel like with Crash, it was like, well, yes, people are clearly interested, so I would be shocked if we don't get more Crash down the line.
Yeah.
But like with Parappa and Wipeout, I don't think people are like, it's not really setting the world on fire, so I'm curious to see what this does.
Well, even smaller PSP stuff like Loco Roco.
These
two are like of a piece to me, where it was like really interesting, neat ideas that were super fun, but on a system that generally the public at large didn't have the access to that they do on PS4.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is a game, like, the art style still, it was minimalist, so still holds up incredibly. So, like, you know, like Loco Roco or Sound Shapes. There's also a game, was there ever a mobile version? Because I just want a phone. I want this on my phone.
I don't think so, but it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
I mean, if there was, it wasn't the actual game.
It was
game.
Something
it was
bad.
Like
But
I think it's, I mean, this is like a nice kind of like stand in for backwards compatibility or like a full library of like classics to be like, hey, Here we remastered it. It looks good. It plays nice.
Yeah.
It's probably like 10 bucks, 20 bucks.
Yeah, still plays like religious field hockey.
There you go. Religious field hockey.
Great. Yeah. Okay.
I don't think you're coming back. I'm not going to let you on the show anymore. keep saying things that are maybe offensive, if nothing else, just really confusing.
I don't think religious field hockey is that's my favorite sexual position.
Oh, now it's offensive.
Now it's
ruined.
So
it.
Yeah, bad.
Real bad.
It's real bad.
All right, so one game that is coming out for PSN this week is The Long Dark.
Oh, it's like religious long-distance running.
It is nothing. It's not at all with that.
The Long Dark is my favorite sexual position.
All right, we're going to move on.
Beyond.
No, stop that. This is a game, this is a, like a first-person survival game. Kind of not horror-ish, but like you're in the wild, you're in like a plane crash or something, you're walking around the woods and, you know, trying to not eat your own legs or whatever.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks gorgeous. It's very kind of like, it's not cel-shaded, but sort of painterly. Like, I'd compare it to how like the Telltale's Walking Dead kind of looks, like a little bit stylized, but still like, you can tell things are dark and gritty.
It's like trying to survive in the wilderness in like The Thing without The Thing being out there.
But there's like there's wolves and stuff.
Yeah,
and you might freeze to death.
Yeah.
I remember hearing about this for ages and being like, why didn't, like, did this just come out for, and it just came out for PlayStation, but it was on Steam Early Access in like 2014.
Years.
Wow. Yeah.
So I think it had that same kind of misfortune that, you know, you get with some early access games, like for instance, like Ark, Survival Evolved, or whatever, where they're testing this thing, and there's no boom, surprise, it's out. There's no red carpet premiere. It's just kind of this weird sort of slow rolling launch.
Yeah, it's weird how rolling launch is the best way to describe a lot of video game launches now, where they just sort of like
putter out, and then over the course of like 2 years, it's like now available on everything.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, now it's really a real available game to buy.
Yeah. And I'm really curious about this game. Like I did that thing where I'm like, oh, I'll wait until the thing is till it's finished. And then 2 years later, I'm like, oh, it's out for the thing. I guess I'll play it. You know?
Yeah.
And we saw stuff like Don't Starve blew up. And that was big when it came to PS4 and everything. So I could see this game finding a huge audience.
Yeah. It does have a story mode also called Winter Mute. So if the like sort of
open-ended survival
isn't for you, that it has that option as well.
Awesome.
It's also weird that you have this on there. They just announced that there's a movie adaptation coming, which seems
that was literally this morning.
Was it really?
Really?
Hinterland, the studio behind the game, announced that, hey, this is coming as a movie. There's no director cast set yet.
So it's a video game movie.
But the creative director of the studio put out a statement in the press release saying that like his intention was always to create products that could span across mediums, and he's penning the script for the movie.
Okay, that's cool.
And they created a short 5-minute film called Elegy, starring Christopher Plummer, that was a proof of concept to give you an idea of what the like tone of this movie should be. Wow. It's directed by someone who's not attached to the movie. Christopher Plummer is not attached to the film. But the whole thing was like, if you want to know what this is going to be like, here's these 5 minutes.
That rules. So you play as a plumber.
Yeah, that was originally Super Mario's name was Christopher Plummer.
No, I think that's interesting. I haven't played the story mode of this yet, so I don't know what it does to kind of set itself apart. But I put this in kind of the same category as something like, I don't know, like a Call of Duty movie or like a Firewatch movie where you're like, well,
it's a Call of Duty cinematic universe. I just have to correct it.
Sorry. I apologize.
It's the CODCU. Come on. Get it together, man.
God damn it. But no, like, it's there's either you have something that is entirely really focused and you're like, you're taking a story and you're lifting it out of one medium into another, or you have something where you're like, it has the name, but it's got the same gun.
Well, like,
it seems his intention was always to like be able to make these things be a TV show or movie. So clearly, whatever story he was making, he had that in mind.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's plenty of movies where people are out in the ice and they're starving, and there's like, you know, there's wolves after them or whatever.
Ice Age.
Well, I mean, like, there's been weirder things to adapt into a movie. Like, this makes more sense. We got an Emoji movie this weekend. To me, Emoji is just like, I'm gonna hit the eggplant button when I'm too drunk to write penis.
They made a movie out of
the eggplant button when I'm too drunk to write penis.
They made a movie out of that 30-second YouTube video called Lights Out.
Oh, yeah.
Like, hey, it's a movie now. It's 2 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Go see it.
So, yeah, this could be a great movie. It's the producer of Resident Evil's attached. I don't know how I feel about that. But, I'm curious about the game. I think the game sounds more interesting to be like, hey, you know, here's, like, you make up your own story.
I'm way more interested in sort of survival stuff than just straight up like, oh, there's zombies again. Like, I'm fine with zombies. I don't actually have the same fatigue a lot of people have with that kind of stuff. But I really like that sort of like lost in the woods, like have to craft to and hunt and gather to survive. Like, if that's really what it's all bringing together. There was this game on the DS.
I was actually going to
say Lost in Blue.
Yes.
Did you play Lost in Blue?
I played Lost in Blue.
Dude.
I bought it because of the IGN coverage of that game.
Yeah, I did too. Those suckers.
Yep. Craig Harris.
Yeah, it's not a great game. It's incredibly hard, but it was like really interesting because you had like energy and health and stamina meters that you had to take care of, and you had to like hunt and gather and make fishing poles and catch stuff and build shelter, and it got very obtuse towards the end of
it. Yeah, totally.
Like, it was almost impossible to beat.
The basic idea of it, it wasn't like I haven't really played any of those games before that.
Yeah, it was part of the Survival Kids series.
Yes, and it was a super interesting introduction to that kind of game.
Same.
Huh. They're turning that into a movie as well with Christopher Plummer.
Yeah?
Oh. Yeah.
I'm down. Yeah. I'm in it.
It's part of this Christopher Plummer cinematic universe.
Yep.
The CPC.
So another game, we've been talking about this kind of on and off for a while now. Dino Frontier is finally out this week. This is PSVR, timed exclusive from Uber Entertainment, who are the guys who did Wayward Sky, which is
far and away my favorite PSVR launch game.
That's, I would say, definitely the most, like, this is a game that is designed for VR.
Yeah.
It's also a game and not just a little funny experience.
Right? Yeah, I think that was the first thing in VR that really taught me that VR is not just front and center something for first person experiences. Mm-hmm. VR is something that can take a third person, like board game style approach or playing with toys and make it incredibly fascinating.
I think that's arguably what it's most effective.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah. I totally agree. And I think for PSVR especially, it works really well because it works around the limitations of the controls and this sort of like that visibility bubble, that biodome that you're in every time you get in PSVR.
Yeah.
You reach too far and your arms start like wiggling and jittering out and stuff like that. So this kind of defeats that. And Wayward Sky was really cool because it let you solve puzzles with this tiny little world that you felt like this kind of giant overseeing, felt like you're floating in the clouds. And Dino Frontier, we got to play it at PSX and again at E3, and it's just really beautiful and it's really well done. We didn't get code until very late, so I can't tell you how the final version stacked out. Definitely will by next week.
But this is a game where you feed little tiny cowboys to dinosaurs, right?
Yeah.
So that's a good idea.
It's really it's really cool. It's sort of SimCity-esque,
yeah,
where you pick up dinosaurs and cowboys, and you have to make this sort of civilization between all of them. And so you can put the – think about like sort of like Jurassic Park Builder, mm-hmm, but mixed with cowboy stuff.
So creationism.
Yeah, with cowboy stuff.
Oh, right. So I get yelled at for saying religious basketball a bunch.
Hey, he didn't cross it with sports, you sick mother. So, check this one out. It's really cool. And I really can't wait to get through the full game, because I think Wayward Sky probably took me about 3 to 4 hours to like really 100%. And that's what I kind of loved about it. I think that's the kind of sweet spot for PSVR stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, give this one a look. And there's a couple more. Was it Tiny Tracks and another game I'm checking out on PSVR now that I'll have a better report on next week?
Nice.
Cool. Yeah.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Ben Lice in our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/group/podcastbeyond. Go make friends in there if you haven't already. Said, yeah, it is. Want to fight? We'll do it. We can do it in the group. Get all down there with two sharp sticks and just beat the crap out of each other.
Tryouts.
All right. Any of the Beyond crew looking forward to Hellblade? Hellblade is, of course, Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice, which is out in 1 week.
Yep.
This is from Ninja Theory, the guys who did Heavenly Sword and Enslaved and the Devil May Cry that everyone got mad at because they gave him the weird haircut. And we've been hearing about this for ages.
I forgot it was coming out next week until a friend literally texted me this morning. I was like, hey, are you going to play Hellblade? I was like,
right?
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, where did this, yeah, this like, okay.
So
yeah,
tell me about this game.
This was another game I played at the Judges Week, which is the pre-E3 event, like two or three years ago, the same event that I played Fortnite at. And it's a, so think of Heavenly Sword. It's a third-person action game, except the way it's presented, at least it was back then, is it's like over the shoulder camera locked like Resident Evil 4, but is a third person action game.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. So it's melee based, but you play this.
That's mostly how I play Resident Evil 4, by the way. I shoot the knee and then
you go up and give them roundhouse kicks and
DDTs, cool suplexes,
diamond Dallas
Stone Cold Steve Austin moves.
But you play this woman and you're in this sort of like weird mythological forest world that seems like purgatory between heaven and hell, and you're encountering all these weird forest gods and goddesses, and like the story seemed cool, but watching the gameplay play out, I was like, I don't know if the combat's gonna be any good, which is weird because the three games you mentioned before, Heavenly Sword, Enslaved, and DMC, all rely on really good combat.
Mm. So what's really interesting about this, it's a hack and slash-ish type thing. Mm-hmm. It is also very much about mental illness, mm-hmm, and they've been very front and center about that leading into this, about how like apparently some of the demons you're fighting are in this character's head. I think it's Senua.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like loosely, just ambiguously mythological, I think. It's sort of Norse, sort of Celtic, sort of something else. I was watching a gameplay clip we have up on IGN, and it looks a little obtuse. Like I'm very curious about it. These guys have been pitching it as like a AAA indie. This is their baby. This isn't like, there's no Capcom, there's no anyone else attached to this. And I'm wondering, there's a part where she's walking around, and to unlock this gate, there are these two runes on the gate, and you have to find those runes hidden naturally in the level itself. So it's sort of like this weird, like, you know, kind of treasure hunt where you're supposed to and at one point, like, you find this thing that looks like a weird kind of Iron Maiden R, and it's like spelled out with rocks on the ground, but you have to go up on a roof to find it. And it doesn't look like the most kind of enthralling way of solving a puzzle in a game. Mm-hmm. Like I like weird, funny shaped puzzles, but then they're like, well, then you get through this, and there's like sort of a cutscene, and then there's a fight, which looks okay, but I could see this game going completely either way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah,
either it is a complete letdown or a total like surprise sleeper hit that everyone falls in love with.
Yeah.
Their track record.
I haven't played Enslaved, sadly, but it's the one I really need to get back to. But I love DMC.
Yeah.
I wasn't like a Devil May Cry person, but I just thought the combat was great in that game. Sure. I had a blast with it.
They make good games.
Yeah. I thought the combat in Heavenly Sword was good too. It was, the camera was this thing that It was just like this weird, it felt like a camera on a slider.
Yeah.
Where it was kind of locked to walls.
Yeah. And it was trying to do with, it tried to be too cinematic at a certain point. Yeah. They got like Andy Serkis to do mocap in that game and everything.
Yeah. It's crazy.
There was a there's a level in DMC that I thought was one of the most just visually inspired things I've ever seen, which is where you're basically on like CNN motion graphics.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like inside Fox News, but you're like fighting a bunch of demons and you're jumping around on like infographics and like lower thirds.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, bring that back. I want more of that.
That was brilliant.
So it's just weird that game is like sneaking up on us. A lot of people were asking like, what do you guys think of it? Like, and it's like, we don't really,
there haven't been, this doesn't seem like, whereas, I feel like games like Fortnite, there's certain games that have a long development cycle that we play very often.
Yeah.
At preview events or at every PAX or something. And so you're like, oh, okay, I've played this a ton. We have most of us have not played this, and I haven't played this in a long time. So like, I want to totally try this out.
And this is unusual. This is one of those games where I think they like revealed concept art before they had anything to show off properly. Yeah. And then they did like a developer diary that had like gameplay nestled within people talking. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I mean, maybe this is what you get when it's like without the help of like a AAA publisher pushing it, you know, like you don't have the marketing arm of it. I don't know.
Titles, like everyone assumed initially that this was tied to Heavenly Sword because it's Hellblade. Mm-hmm. Like, you assume that it's in the same universe. And like, no, it's not. It's just another afterlife weapon. You're like, okay.
So they've got a little logo thing in there, like a little kind of rune, which they've had on attached to this game for a while now. But only recently did people start being, that looks like a fidget spinner, because it does. It's
Oh man, that sucks.
And I'm like, I've seen people with like tattoos of this thing, just like, you know, three intertwining
spinners. Oh no, fidget spinner tattoos.
That well, now they look like fidget spinner tattoos, but you know, hey, just got to do it on your neck.
Spin
your own neck. Here's some good news: Persona 5 is getting an anime.
Crashing through a wall.
Yeah, it is called Persona 5: The Animation. It is coming out in 2018 in Japan. No word on localization. There was a prologue thing. There's Persona 5, the animation, the Daybreakers, which is a prologue that came out. That's on Crunchyroll. So if you want to go see that, Marty, have you watched that?
I haven't, which I need to. Especially now,
Persona 5.
Yeah, I'm a fake Persona boy. I am all in for Persona 5, the anime, and then every Persona 5 spinoff imaginable, like Persona 3 and 4 got.
Yep.
Like, I always made fun of Andrew for playing, like, I'm like, you're going to play this game where they just dance? You're going to play this dancing game?
And then you put 100 hours in.
And now I'm like, I want these men to dance for me. I want to play this game where the men dance. Yeah, I'd play, like, a snoozing simulator. I'd do anything.
Yeah, I found myself kind of, like, wanting to jump into a backlog game. I'm still, like, grinding through Yakuza, which is, I want it to just end at this point. I really love that game, but it's just also, like, there's such long-ass cutscenes, and I'm like, I could jump back into Persona. I just kind of don't want to play a grindy game right now, you know? And I like the characters in Persona, and I like that there's a story, but I'm sort of impatient in this weird way. But I'm also like, oh, if they made, like, a Persona, like, OVA, like, I could be down to watch that.
Yeah, summer's a weird time for games, because you want something that can just sort of, like, I want something that's sort of all-encompassing. Like, I wish, like, a game like Horizon came out right
now. Yeah.
Because that's perfect. And I think about on PlayStation, I haven't played a game like Horizon since Horizon. I don't mean, like, exactly like Horizon, but something that's, like, a 50-hour, really sort of meaty third-person action game.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to get a ton this fall. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to be all over Shadow of War and a bunch of others.
Oh, dude, it's got Shelob in it.
Yeah, the spider.
The spider.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
The big spider.
Man, for a dude who really liked Shadow of Mordor, you don't know anything about Lord of the Rings.
I was kind of iffy about that.
That's why I like Shadow of Mordor.
The sequel, and then they're like, I just saw it's like Shelob trailer, and I'm like, oh, no, I'm going to play that. I'm going to play the crap out of that.
That's a weird nickname for Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, Shelob LaBeouf.
That's not the character voiced by Camille Nanjiani.
Shia LaBeouf.
No, isn't Shelob in the game a woman? Wasn't that like a big thing?
I'd be the big
thing. It doesn't talk. It really just goes, and like it makes that.
Not sure what I was anyway. Thing about it.
They actually mocapped a real spider.
And they were like, this woman only has two legs. We needed a woman with eight legs.
Yeah.
A huge, terrifying, big phallic stinger. And
so they got.
Really selling me on the spider guy.
That's so they got David Arquette from the film Eight Legged Freaks.
You think so? You think they got him?
Yeah.
How fast do you think he picked up his phone? A quarter of a ring?
He picked it up so quick that it fumbled out of his hands into the toilet. Oh no, I lost it.
Scream 5, is that happening?
Anyway, Dragon Quest XI, Echoes of an Elusive Age. Is this just regular Dragon Quest XI?
Yes, or? It's just what it's called in America.
Okay.
I just want to make a note while we were talking about weird Japanese things coming here next year. Dragon Quest XI, which just came out in Japan.
This is like the new, gorgeous PS4 one.
Yes, this is the one that just came out like 2 or 3 days ago in Japan. They announced that it's getting fully localized and coming to the West next year. I think it's great because
this game looks gorgeous. Yeah. It's Toriyama's art style. Mm-hmm. I've always like wanted to love the Dragon Quest games because they look like fantasy Dragon Ball, basically. Yeah. But I don't know. They're either I just don't get into them. Mm-hmm. Don't get hooked on them. And this one looks like it's kind of open worldy. Yeah. And like actually, I don't know if it's action RPG or is
well,
it
yeah, really I think cool? It is a little bit more actiony than the other ones, and especially I mean because 10 was an MMO. And so this is going back to single player, but I think it's pulling in some of the MMO stuff. Yeah, but next year between this and Dragon Ball FighterZ, the year that Toriyama's coming.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
No, I've just been watching like cutscenes of this online. It looks fantastic. So yeah, if it lets me hang out with those slimes real good.
The slims? The
slime time. Yeah.
Ooh, is that what you call it?
So anyway, now it's time for Rapid Fire. We hopped over to our Facebook group, which is groups.com/net/GeoCities.
Not really. Not,
but it's facebook.com/group/podcast beyond. Anyway.
Angel Fire is my favorite Vegas magician.
That's actually an upcoming Ninja Theory game. It's going to be very good. Tommy Ratliff says, what jump in technology would you guys like to see in future consoles besides graphics? This is a great, great question.
Man.
Go ahead. I was going to say, like, one of the things I completely forgot about with the luxuries of this generation is rest mode and how much of a wonderful, like, just, like, ease of use thing that is.
Yeah.
I would love just that kind of stuff even more streamlined.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I just want a really snappy UI. Mm-hmm. I feel like PlayStation, I mean, when you compare it to PlayStation 3 and Vita, the PS4 is crushing it, but it's still like just a laggy mess of a system mm-hmm. sometimes. Like you go to click download game and there's that please wait thing that pops up that you've all seen for hundreds of hours. No one can explain why. Like sometimes it's 5 seconds, sometimes it's 5 minutes. Then you back out. Like I went to the little TV button to click down to like Netflix and Hulu and stuff the other day, and it just like hung for 8 seconds. Mm-hmm. It's a stupid thing to complain about, but like, I mean, it's kind of why, like, I play a lot of Nintendo Switch too, and obviously there's nothing on that system. So it's incredibly bare bones, but very snappy. But just moving around the UI there is clean, and, you know, it'll be filled with bloat in 3 years.
Sure.
But right now, like, I just want something like that. I want the store to not be like a vertical column of letters every time I search.
That you have to type and you have to start at A. And
yeah, like so, some weird upside down abacus.
Can we just get a section that's just the drop that just shows you all of the games, all the new games that just came out, this week's games. Not
sort
like,
them by the new, just have a button for this week's new games and not like games, more games. Sort by newest games.
And like eight of them are pre-orders. One of them's for a movie that's in theaters right now.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about you, but I love searching by letter by letter.
Yeah.
Name of a game.
That's the kind of stuff when we were like, all right, well, this generation is not going to be the sort of like seismic leap that we thought it would be. They're going to make up for it with everything else. And in many ways they did. But like the system is still a very slow, laggy mess when it comes to a lot of very fundamental things.
To be able to change our PSN names.
Oh, that's it.
I gave them that one.
They're gonna need a whole new processor for that. There's gonna be no backwards compatibility. Yeah. It's gonna be real rough. They're going back to the cell processor. They goofed. They were like, no.
That was actually perfect. Yeah.
At this point, you're dying at age 90 with Bungle Dung 69 for the next year.
It'd be Sora 2792 for the rest of
really?
My life. Yep.
All right.
You sore about it?
I played. I was in New York over the weekend on my flight to and from. All I did was play Breath of the Wild.
Yeah,
and I'm almost done with it. Mm-hmm. I beat the fourth Divine Beast. I got the Master Sword. And I did Eventide Island. But that whole time, I'm like, man, I'm gonna finish Zelda. But I wish I could play Nier on this plane.
Yes.
I wish I could play Pyre on this plane. Yep. I wish I could play Yakuza on this plane. Like, I really do. I don't want everything to become the Switch. I still think I'm primarily going to play my games at home. But that being said, it would be so nice to be able to just play these games lag-free, hassle-free,
whatever.
On a gorgeous screen.
Yeah, and I have a feeling the cool thing about the video game industry, and this is reductive, is that everyone steals from each other and that no idea is original.
Sure.
And that when something gets big enough, everyone is sort of forced to do it, even just momentarily. Like you look at motion controls, which ultimately didn't really pan out. We're not really using them for anything outside of VR these days. But Sony saw what was going on with the Wii and they jumped on it, right? They made Move controllers and then Xbox made Kinect and all this other stuff. I have a feeling like... That's why I'm excited about the Switch on behalf of Sony, is that if it gets so big that you absolutely cannot ignore it, Sony is going to come out with a version of it that's five times more powerful. Like, that's what they do. They make the most powerful handhelds on Earth, and they'll make the portable PS4 that you can bring anywhere.
Yeah.
And that's really exciting. Like I don't know if it'll happen.
Yeah, it's not insane to think about it, because there was the original PlayStation, and then there was like the little tiny baby one that had like a snap-on thing. And this was at a time where like rechargeable batteries were not standard. There was no such thing as USB, or if there was, it sucked. And like now we're at a point where everything is rechargeable by familiar cords and plugs, and LED screens are cheaper than ever. And there are things that are possible now that are like, I mean, the Vita could have been that if they tried a few things differently. But.
Yeah, and I think because the Vita was in like a completely different piece of tech than the PS4, you had a massive disconnect with the games that were being developed for it, and that most people ended up just playing like 2D JRPGs and like, you know, like kind of like whimsical indie games. And the AAA Call of Duties didn't work out because they had to make something from the ground up. The like the Killzones felt like they were great, and the God of Wars and stuff like that, but they were like smaller versions of their bigger brothers. So I think getting rid of that gap entirely and just making one system that works everywhere. And I think with like cloud saves and crossplay and all that kind of stuff, I think Sony's like, they're poised to do it better than Nintendo can, because Nintendo right now, like if I lost my Switch, my Zelda file is gone. Whereas on Sony, I could just download it.
Yeah.
You know? So,
I mean, let's imagine that we've already got the PlayStation 4 Pro, we've got the regular one, and there's the Slim. Like, what if towards the end of the console's life cycle, we get something that's, I don't know, the size of a VHS tape that has a screen you can buy separately that snaps on, that has a battery pack that can run for 3 hours or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's all solid state, so there's not like a bunch of fans and stuff spinning or whatever.
Well, that's the thing too. So like cool. I realize is I don't really need more than 3 hour battery life, and if I do, I just bring an external battery and a cable. Yeah. Like if I'm in a situation where I fly cross country, which I do like every 3 weeks at this point, like I just bring a battery with me.
Also, most flights I've been on, like my flight yesterday, had a power outlet.
Yeah, so it's good to go.
I mean, I don't really want a Vita 2 in that sense. I want just I want a PlayStation 4 Pocket. like that would be really cool.
PS4P.
As for what we want with future consoles, aside from portability, I just think like getting rid of loading times, like whatever that means. If they're hidden, I mean, we've gotten so close with that where now it's like you play Horizon or Uncharted or GTA or whatever, and it's like it loads the overworld, and then the rest is kind of happening in the background.
I think what you said is really important. If they're hidden,
yeah,
and I think that that should be sort of an industry standard, is that loading times will always be there in some way, but just don't say loading with a big bar. Like, give me something to play or something to look at. Like there was a while there where I think it was Namco that like. They copyrighted the right for like a loading screen minigame.
And then they didn't use it for anything good.
Yeah.
They were like, oh, it's a Dragon Ball. Where you're loading this fight scene and you just fly around on a cloud and collect Dragon Balls. And you're like, you know, there's only 7, right? And they're like, no, let's keep getting them all. Gotta get them all. Carlos E. Moro says, did any of you guys get a PlayStation TV, either the television unit or the console?
Yes.
I got one that were crazy cheap.
How did that work out for you guys?
I got it because I was like, someday I'm going to own a second television, and I don't.
Well, that's the little box that plugs in. Yeah. So my issue with that was I got one for dirt cheap in one of those like Newegg deals or something where they're like $17, and it uses Vita memory cards, which are $1,000. And so it didn't happen.
Right.
It's also like, I think it's the kind of, you would have to have like a very, like in my apartment, the Wi-Fi signal strength wasn't great enough to send a signal from my PS4 to the TV in the other room and sort of like Chromecast through that. Mm-hmm. I think I got it working with with like Sound Shapes,
sure,
which is like a rudimentary, you know, simple 2D platforming game. But for something like Uncharted, like no way. Mm-hmm. Whereas like Andrew Goldfarb said, like he loves his because he was able to get, he got a Vita memory card for cheap, and then he somehow.
That sounds like a lot.
Deal only with $400?
$400. Yeah. $20 gig.
Yeah.
And he was able to like basically stream a bunch of Vita games onto his TV through his bedroom from the other room, which is like kind of awesome with a PlayStation controller. Mm-hmm. Again, I think it was like, is one of those things, it was a half step. It was so close. Didn't really work out. If you can get one for cheap and you can get a memory card for cheap and you have like a bunch of routers in your apartment and you're in that weird edge case, like give it a go, because I think you can find them for like, I got mine for like $16 or something like that.
Same here. I was gonna say, like, I have it hooked up downstairs and I'm like, I want to play all my favorite Vita games that I don't already play on my Vita that I can fit onto this like onboard memory of, which like, is like 512 megs or something.
Yeah, I don't even think it was that much, was it?
I don't know. It's something like that.
Yeah, it's not a lot.
But I haven't even tried the remote play stuff. I might try that out. But
I went to download Uncharted on it. It was like, nope, can't do that. And I was like, really?
Yeah.
That's like one of the five games you think of.
Yeah.
All right, so Will Fournier says, will Days Gone be more successful than The Last of Us?
Probably not.
No, no. The Last of Us is its own thing. It was like that was, I mean, it's gonna be constantly compared to that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's gonna be like more technically ambitious. I think there's gonna be a lot more like, I mean, it's an open world game for starters.
The Last of Us is one of the most special games to sell millions of copies because people identify that game with emotion, which I don't think you really get from a lot of like AAA blockbuster big video games.
Oh, well, you look at the best selling games. That's Call of Duty and Madden and GTA and Minecraft and
Which you're never really like. That made me feel something. I mean, the music in Minecraft makes me sad, which is a feeling.
Yeah,
but I'm like, there's something about The Last of Us that like you think that there's emotional resonance with that game that I've yet to get from Days Gone. I think that's gonna be a really fun video game. Like, there's a lot of cool stuff going on in that game, but at best, like, you have this connection between the main character and his daughter, and then you hope
his motorcycle. His daughter passes away.
A lot of motorcycle guys call their motorcycle their daughter.
It's actually a lococycle people.
I see it selling well, though.
Yeah, I mean, I want it to be good, and I hope it's good. It's just I remember the first demo that I saw for Last of Us when it was on stage at their E3 press conferences. I forget who was standing on stage, but they were playing, and it was Joel going through that sort of like the office apartment building, and he's like taking out guys and having to deal with all that, and it is super intense, and you feel in that moment with that guy, and then he drops the controller and like walks off stage.
Yeah,
like I still remember that demo vividly, whereas I remember the Days Gone demo of being like, oh, they opened and closed the show with that game for some reason.
Yeah,
and there were a lot of bodies on screen. Mm-hmm. And that's what I remember. Yeah, like, I want it to be cool. And everything I've seen, I'm interested. But it didn't hit me in the way that...
I mean, that's the thing. Comparing to The Last of Us isn't... It isn't a knock against Days Gone. It's a praise against... Or a praise for The Last of Us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like...
Yeah, I kind of wish that it was leaning more into the badass side of things as opposed to, like, the emotionally wrought, like, angsty things. You know, it's gonna be... I think it's gonna be, put it this way... Days Gone is going to be more Walking Dead and less The Road. Like, it's going to be...
Sure. Yeah.
Totally.
There's going to be emotions and stuff there, but it's going to be also like, yeah, you're going to set Far Cry booby traps and set the zombies out and they're going to eat the guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so...
Yeah, I wonder where this game would sit in a world where there wasn't The Last of Us 2 announced.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, yeah.
I think it would have... It would have a much more sort of clearly defined role in the universe of video games, whereas... Right now it feels like kind of a holdover until The Last of Us 2. But again, they're both doing different things, and I'm excited to play both.
Yeah. The Last of Us 2 is coming out for quite a bit.
Yeah.
Brennan Muniz says, at this point in time, would you recommend a PSVR? Not really. Like, it sucks to say it, but like it's really unclear what is happening with that.
Well, what did we spend like all last fall and Christmas saying, right? We kept saying like, check back in by summer of next year.
Yeah.
Like, maybe if it has this like big robust library and third parties are all over it, and it's not there.
We are getting like a Final Fantasy fishing game. We're getting Skyrim. We're getting some other weird little, we did get a showing for it at E3, which is good.
Yep.
Yeah. But it also, again, we've got this weird problem of finding Move controllers. People are having no problem finding the physical units. People were texting pictures of it at, like, you know, Walmart and Target to us.
Finally.
Which is good. It's out there and you can buy it. You still have to find the camera and the Move controllers, sort of a weird like fetch quest, you know.
Yeah,
like one item for your potion is too hard to track down.
And then once you're there, like, I mean, I still think that they haven't really done the best job of communicating these are the big games this week.
Yeah.
You have to sort of relegate yourself to digging around and really falling in love with cool, quirky little indie games.
Yeah. Frontier is coming out this week, and you told me that.
Yeah.
You know, like the PlayStation blog said that. I didn't find that out through anything else. You know, there's no little ping on my dashboard being like, hey, there's new VR games out. You can go check them out right here. It's like, hey, PlayStation Now. I'm like, hey, delete.
Yeah. That said, I think
don't want that there.
I think there's a lot of really awesome experiences on it.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
if you can get one, I don't know, refurbished or on the cheap or off Craigslist without getting stabbed, I think you should get one. Like, but what I can't say right now with any sort of like confidence is what this system is going to look like in 6 months or a year, you know? And that's like when you buy into a PS4, you're buying into a system that is going to last you for 5-10 years.
Yeah.
When you buy into a PSVR, like we had a bunch of really cool stuff at the end of the year last year. We had Resident Evil 7 at the start of this year, which is like, you know, one of the coolest things ever done in VR. But from here on out, like, you're looking at cool stuff like, you know, Moss, you know, which is like an adorable game about a mouse. But I'm going to play it. Max is going
to
play it.
I'm very excited to play that game.
I don't know if that's really what you're looking for, though, right? Yeah. Like, we don't know right now. There's a new Battlefront coming out. We don't know if there's like a VR component. We haven't heard anything about that. You know, there's a couple of little like mini game things, like the Final Fantasy thing.
Yeah, dude. Like, it feels like a very specialized piece of kitchen equipment. Like, it's a fancy appliance versus a necessary appliance. Like, a PS4 is a microwave. It is a thing that will cook anything you throw at it. And occasionally you're like, don't put that in there, it'll explode and it'll go bad. But the VR is like a juicer or something, or like a spiralizer.
So it's like a juicer. It's like you drink a lot of juice.
Not to keep like evoking the Nintendo Switch, because it's a PlayStation show, but it is a newly, recently, wildly successfully announced and launched console of video game hardware in the wild. And I think there's things to learn from it. And I think the way third parties have a wait and see approach with Nintendo stuff, and justifiably always have, because their stuff doesn't sell well there, there is that period of like, we have to see if this is fundamentally worth it for our business. And Nintendo came out and supported it super strong at the start. And they said, we have this, and this. And they all became million sellers. And even stuff that you could port over is doing well. And then you start getting stuff like Skyrim, and you get all these other third-party announcements slowly trickling out. We got a thing from Capcom the other day being like, you know, Ultra Street Fighter sold 500,000 units. And it's like a port, basically.
So now they're like, they're going to put it.
So now they're pushing everything on there. And I think that we missed that chance with PSVR. I really think that, like, Sony had to really push hard in that first 6 months to a year, and it didn't really happen the way it was supposed to. So the wait and see approach has now waited, and now we're seeing that it's not panning out the way people thought it would. And part of that was the supply constraints. Part of that was there wasn't really just a lot of AAA software at the jump.
Well, and part of it is also just VR's place in gaming right now. It is still very nascent, and we don't know what the future looks like. And a lot of VR companies have talked about how they're like, they knew this was not going to be a 0 to 100 success sort of thing. But it's, how long do we have to wait for it to be more ubiquitous? Do we have to wait till this fall? Do we have to wait for 3 falls from now? Like, what is that time?
And PSVR sold well, right?
Yeah, but I still don't own one. And like, I will look at it again. It's pretty much like every fall I'll look at it. Like, when sales start to come up around Black Friday, I'll take a look. And it's like, there are a ton of experiences I'd love to play on there, but nothing was like, I need to own this extra $300 worth of equipment.
Well, we saw that thing around Amazon Prime Day, right? Where Oculus dropped to like $300
with controllers and everything. Controllers,
which is a tremendous deal. And that, I think, reignited a lot of excitement around that platform. And we haven't seen anything like that with PSVR. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I don't think PSVR is going to be PlayStation's Virtual Boy, but I don't even know if it'll be their Vita at this point. Yeah. You know, so it's in a really interesting spot.
It'd be really cool if they made it so that it was compatible with PC. Like, if they were just like, hey, it goes both ways. You plug it in there and, you know, do weird, you know, homebrew stuff.
Yeah, I think it really needs to find its voice. It needs to find what it needs to be.
Yeah. Jim Sahota writes, what's the last concert you went to? Will any of you be at the Kendrick Lamar concert at Oracle or in San Jose?
I wish. I didn't know he was performing there.
He's performing just for Jim.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a one-on-one. He's like, are you guys going to my private Kendrick Lamar concert?
He's going to pop out of a birthday cake.
Marty, what's the last show you went to?
I don't know.
You saw IU?
I saw IU.
I love that group.
My favorite Finnish
group.
It was relatively recent. I can't remember.
All right. Dornbush?
I haven't been to a concert since I've lived out here.
Same.
In New York, I think the last bands I saw were the Gaslight Anthem and the Kills.
Wow.
Yeah, I stopped going to concerts when A, I got to a certain age, and B, I moved to California. I didn't grow up with I went to hip hop shows like 2 or 3 nights a week in New York City, and then I moved out here, and it was just like, hey, you guys want to see E-40's cousin? And I was like, not really.
Yeah,
so I just went to bed.
Yeah, E-40. I went to a winery and saw Andrew Bird, who's like a folk violinist, and it was nice, but it was at a winery, and I'm like, I feel old. it was also like being on Big Little Lies. It was just a bunch of like weird like Monterey moms getting wine drunk and like touching somebody's leg.
I guess I didn't think of it because I was thinking like a performer musician, but I did at E3. I did go to the Kingdom Hearts Orchestra.
Okay. Yeah.
So yeah, there is that. Where,
oh yeah, we went to the Zelda.
That's right.
dozens of amazing musicians.
Yeah, we got mom beautiful. Drunk there.
Oh, yeah, very mom drunk at the Zelda Symphony. Yeah, I threw up on a princess. I did not throw up on a princess.
I go to more comedy shows these days. I mean, same. In terms of like Because you can sit.
Yeah, I just put that in there honestly because I was curious.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is our show for you this week. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining us and hanging out and having a good time. You can find us all on Twitter. I'm Max Scoville. Brian, you are Agent Bizzle.
That's right.
You are JM Dornbush. Mm-hmm. And you are McBiggity with two G's and two T's. Of course, subscribe to us on YouTube, which is youtube.com/IGNBeyond. And that Facebook group, one more time, is facebook.com/group/podcastbeyond. Anything else we want to touch on real quick?
No, that was great. You did a great intro there.
Is that it? We're done? That's it? Cool. Ooh. Check out my mummy pin. It's a pin that looks like a mummy.
Slam dunk basketball.
Yes. From downtown.
Religion. What are you supposed to do at the end of the show?
I think we can go home.
Beyond.
You just stop beyond it.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep, with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode, so search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.